Deuces?
Clark County Hospital, Springfield, Ohio. Dr. Martin.
You even remember the person who delivered you?
Well,
is that doctor?
Every time I make some kind of medical telephone call, they ask me your birth date and where were you born?
Right, exactly. I get the same thing.
So maybe a good place to start is, I think when you first started at Kewaunee, you were a camper in Falcon Lodge. Is that correct? But you were a day camper. So how is it that you happened to be only there for the days? Where did you go at night?
My mother was occupying one of those cabins behind the Myers place.
Okay.
They're Horatio and Eleonora were the names, and my mother and my father were in one of them.
Okay.
That's where I would sleep at night.
So you were probably, what, 8 years old or so?
What?
8 years old? How old were you that summer? Do you remember?
My first year was 1939. Yes, I was eight.
8 years old.
And then the next year, I graduated still a day camper. From the Falcon to the Panther. And the Panther Lodge now has been renamed Eagle.
Correct. And what's your most vivid memories of those first couple summers that you were in camp? Like, what did you enjoy doing, or what did you remember? Because your father was working at the camp at the time.
Oh, yeah.
So you obviously were seeing him, but yet it was still a new experience for you.
I don't have any specific memories from the early years. Maybe I should.
Like riflery or something that you'd never done before, probably, or sailing. I don't know if you've been sailing before, or maybe you had.
I didn't get interested in sailing until the mid-40s.
Okay.
And 1 year, sailing was being run by some brothers, and bad chemistry.
Mm.
It was the next year that I really took up sailing.
Great. Tell us a little bit about your dad, because he was very famous in Kewaunee history, and Dean Ross Miller.
My dad's first year at Kewaunee was 1925, and he came up by himself, leaving my mother and my older brother back to wherever they lived. I'm not sure. Springfield, I think. And Dad was basically checking out the place. And the next summer, 1926, my mother came up with my brother, and I didn't come up until 1931. And according to family lore, I was put in a basket in the back seat of a car, driven up at 4 months. And that's when it took 4 days to drive from Springfield to Weld.
Wow. Springfield, Mass? Or Springfield, Ohio.
Okay.
You know where that is?
I do know where that is.
She's from Ohio.
I go to school in Ohio.
Where?
Findlay.
Findlay?
Mm-hmm.
You know Findlay?
I went to school in Ohio, too.
Where?
Oberlin.
Oh, very nice. My friend goes there.
Are you in school now?
Mm-hmm. I have one more year.
What year?
I'm going to be a senior.
Senior?
Mm-hmm.
What's your major?
History.
History?
Yeah.
Isn't that cool?
Congratulations. You're living through, right now, a very important part of history.
This is true. We need more liberal arts. They're important.
And I'm going to escape.
Yeah, it's a hard time to be actually watch. Yes. Is it like a little difficult to see?
I don't happening? Offend you by statement.
No.
Oh.
Speak freely. You're among friends.
Well, when I got to Covenant Living, I became a part of a small group, 8 or 10 people, who would eat frequently together, 2 or 3 times a week. And that was a group that was organized by one man, a retired banker.
Mm-hmm.
And I discovered months after I had joined this group that he was a Trump supporter. So I don't think I said anything to offend him, but I was surprised.
Interesting.
Okay so far?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's okay to be in those kind of discussions if people keep an open mind. I have plenty of friends that support that party, and we have great conversations, and I try not to offend them, but you just kind of speak what you believe, and they speak what they believe, and then you agree to disagree. So I don't think it's offensive. You can have the discussion without being offensive, is all I'm saying. So
is that machine running?
It is.
What are you going to tell me?
You want to be off the record now? Is this off the record?
Off the record.
Okay.
I can pause.
Well, let's put it this way. Not for attribution. What does Donald Trump have in common with the chemistry, the atoms?
Do you know the answer?
You've heard it?
You told me. That's the only reason I know.
Have I told you?
No. You've told me some other Trump jokes, but I don't know this one.
I don't know.
Donald Trump having common
with the chemistry atom. with the atom.
Yeah,
the little atoms.
ATOMS.
Atoms make up everything.
They do.
You get a little chemistry lesson. You made him with the joke too.
Oh, good one. Good one.
Well, how about the poem?
You know that one. I couldn't remember that one. Tell her.
Roses are red, that kind of
thing. Our POTUS right now is Don Trump. He really enjoys a good hump. But his morals and smarts are encased in his flatulence. It's high time he got sent to the dump.
You've
heard that.
No, I love it. We should document that.
Is that a clean joke or whatever? You know,
that's why
on.
I say the machine is off.
Oh boy. Yeah, ain't that the truth? God,
what?
set ain't that the truth? Send him
nice
to the dump.
Said,
yeah. Well. And then, well, it's hard for a day to go by without the news providing something else.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
It's one thing after another, right?
Yeah. I thought I had told you those. No.
Not that joke. That was.
You told. Yeah, she wasn't here when you told me.
Hmm?
She was not here when you told me.
Oh.
But I'm glad you said them again. Maybe you'll remember it.
As I say, that's not for attribution.
Right.
But that was one of, maybe the only one of my jokes that I made up. Others I've stolen.
Right, that's okay.
Modified.
You wrote that poem?
Yeah.
That's impressive.
Are we back on the record yet? I think we can be.
Yes.
You see, that was so clean. I think that could have been on the record. Because that's an original. You're not even plagiarizing anyone.
Yeah. It's what?
You're not even plagiarizing anyone. It's your
all you.
I'm not plagiarizing
right.
anything
so
out
that's,
of that.
That is, yeah, that's a pearl.
The first one as a modification. Why can you not trust atoms? Answer, they make up everything.
Exactly.
So all I did was to modify the why can't you part of it.
Yeah, makes sense. Well, that was a pretty quick segue from 1931 to 2026 in one long paragraph. Yeah.
From this, the 4-month-old baby in the basket coming in 1931 to the present day comedian you are.
Yeah. Well. So I got a question that's not a Kwani question, but it's just because that was such a nice segue. Of all the, you know, he was an economics professor, is what Dick did. And I'm just curious, because you've always been a student of economics and business. So of all the administrations and presidencies you've seen, which one do you think was the most to your way of understanding the economy? In other words, which president do you think did what was best for the country, but also best for the economy?
Pass on that. I don't have an answer.
Really, you don't? Of all the presidents that you've seen, and you know,
I haven't thought about things in that form, so
right.
I don't want to try to hack it now.
Right. Well, economics, you know, obviously gets political because the politicians spin it to whatever they're doing, and then somehow find a way to say, you know, the economy's good because of me, when in essence the economy is the economy. It's so big, one president can't really change it, except Trump is trying over his, you know, his term, trying to change it.
Well, that's the person at the bottom of the list, is Trump.
Right, right. No, I don't think he ever took an economics course. If he did, he didn't pass.
You know where this one's going. Where did Trump stand in the MBA program at Wharton? Where did he graduate?
I don't think he got an MBA, though. I thought he just got an... I don't think he got an MBA. Just has an undergraduate degree from Wharton.
It was a BBA.
A BBA, right.
Yeah.
Where did he stay? I have no idea. I didn't think it was public information.
I'm assuming bottom.
Yeah.
Trump has said that he graduated second in his class.
I find that hard to imagine. And the
what he didn't tell you was that he was counted from the bottom.
And he's an atom.
Yeah, I suppose you could say that. I was second in my class and be second from the bottom. I guess that could be a true statement. So, yeah. Anyway, maybe we should go back to Kwani. It's more... enlightening.
We could open up a whole can of worms.
Well, we could go on for a long time.
With
it sounds like
politics.
It's four of us, but
yeah.
So Kalani. Let's go back to sailing, because so what are some of your recollections of things that happened when you were teaching sailing in the sailing department in the I guess in the '50s, or would it be in? The
I don't
40s?
Remember much from. When I was running the sailing department. But I do remember a couple of years earlier than that, being out in the Seagull with the sailing master, with Bob Page. Mm-hmm. And that was the year, like most years, when we hadn't found Bally Rock.
Which is a rock.
The sailing department
right
had,
the
response,
it's marked.
Had the responsibility for marking the reefs at this end of the lake.
Mm-hmm.
Before the state took over, so we would make the buoys, plant them at the right spot.
Right.
Well, we always had trouble finding Bally Rock. So Bob Page and I were out in the Gull, and Bud Singelman was out in a snipe. And suddenly, Bob and I heard Bud saying, "Hey, Bob, I found Bally." He was stuck on top of it with the snipe.
Found it with, oh my gosh. Do any damage to the boat?
Yeah.
Did it?
Well, that's one of the few stories I remember.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a hard one to find.
There's another story I'll tell on myself. I was out with, I was a senior counselor at this point. I was out in the Gulf with three junior counselors right in front of camp. Heavy wind, big waves. And suddenly a wave broke over the transom. So the gulls went under the water stern first. Just
wow.
And they're standing on the shore watching me with George Frank. So I had to go explain to George Frank why we had kind of not followed what he thought I should. Anyway, that's the only time I ever went over in a sailboat.
Did it actually capsize or did it just swamp?
Well, I forget. We swamped first.
Okay, and then the way.
I don't think we capsized.
Okay.
We were right in front of camp, so we got in very quickly.
Yeah. Those are big boats. They hold a lot of water. So he must have taken on a pretty good sized wave.
Yeah, it was, well. Well, we pulled it up on the beach, tipped it over, emptied it.
What did George Frank say? Do you remember?
I don't remember.
Okay. Was he angry?
I think he was pleased that I was basically explaining and implicitly apologizing, setting a bad example. I told him why, and I told him why it was not my fault. I think he believed me.
Well, you know, when you're responsible for people and you see a sailboat go over or capsize, you probably are thinking, like, I hope they're all okay. Yeah. They're all good swimmers.
Now, I remember the year 1946, when we bought the Hawk. The Hawk was in a freight boxcar. So we went down to Dixfield with a truck, a bed truck.
Flatbed, yep.
Flatbed. Lifted the hull up, put it on the truck, drove it in.
Wow.
And then sunk it so it could swell.
Yep. And we still have both of those boats, the Gull and the Hawk. And I think the Snipe too. Do we sell that Snipe?
Snipe was built in the 30s by the fellow who ran the shop. And what was his name?
Herb Birch. No, before Herb.
Before Bert, Herb.
Oh, it'll come. As soon as you leave, it'll come.
I don't know who it would have been before Herb.
The Snipe was not a favorite boat. It would not point very well.
Mm-hmm.
It was not as fast as we thought it should be.
How many years did you run sailing?
How many years did I run? Four.
4 years, okay.
Yeah.
And then other activities? What other activities were you
involved? I was always in sailing, never in anything else.
I gotcha.
When I graduated from college, I was subject to the draft. Korean War was underway.
Mm-hmm.
I volunteered for the Navy. What else? So I was in the service until the end of 1955. Then my trips to Weld were not in the employ of the Frank brothers.
And you served in the Navy in Korea? No, where were you?
Closest I got to Korea was Long Beach, California. Ah. Although we did make another ship I was on, we made a trip to Portland, Oregon.
Okay.
I was on three ships. First one doesn't count. And there were two little ships, both minesweepers. And I ended up in Charleston, which is the home port for those two little ships. Which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I was glad I was on small ships rather than on battleships.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how did you get to Long Beach, California?
What?
How did you get to Long Beach, California? Was that on a ship, or did you fly over and then get on a ship?
I went to OCS.
Right.
In Newport.
Okay.
And my first duty station was with an old World War II minesweeper. That was just a holding pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And after 4 months on that ship, I was transferred to new construction in Mare Island, which is just north of San Francisco on the bay. So
Mare, M-A-R-E.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So we put that ship into commission and brought it around through the canal up to Charleston, which is his home port.
Wow, that's a long journey.
Yeah. And then I got transferred to another new commissioning ship in Quincy Adams Yacht Yard, Quincy, Massachusetts.
Quincy, yes, okay.
And that ended up in Charleston also, which is the home port of minesweepers on the Atlantic coast.
Sounds like some nice places compared to Korea.
Hmm?
Sounds like some nice places in the U.S. instead of going to Korea.
Yeah. I don't have the numbers exact, but in Korea we lost something like 10 ships,
mm-hmm.
five of which were minesweepers.
Oh boy.
So I was glad not to get to Korea. I actually got there, got into the Navy as the Korean War was winding down. That was the war we had an ending to.
Yeah, thank goodness.
Yeah. I know, right?
I spent a year at MIT on a grant and would join other members of the economics department at lunch frequently around a large round table. And that was the afternoon, that was the noon of September 64, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sitting next to somebody I vaguely knew. The discussion was of the Korean War. And I said to the person on my left, this afternoon I resigned my commission. And he leaned back and said, that may be the best decision you ever made. Mm-hmm. I don't know the extent to which people were called up for continuing service after being in the Korean War. But I was lucky in that regard.
Yeah.
Got the GI Bill.
Yeah.
That's great. And it was voluntary, right? There wasn't a mandated draft at that time?
There was a draft, but I would not have volunteered for the Navy if there had not been a draft.
Okay.
Don't know what I would have done, but I was draft bait.
Could have gone into the Army and sent it.
Yeah.
Smart choice.
Smart move. Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you did your graduate work, Dick, was that on the GI Bill?
Pardon?
When you did your graduate work, was that on the GI Bill after your service?
I started graduate work in 1956. did most of it in Yale. And while I was, well, at Yale, and then I went to Wesleyan as an employee. And by my 12 months at MIT were when I was at Wesleyan.
Okay.
64, 65.
Aaron, you got any Kiwani questions you want to?
I have a whole list of Kiwani questions.
Great.
Well,
we'll oh, you've got the script.
I was asking Kenley because we'd interviewed you, or not we, I guess I wasn't even alive, but in 99, you did an interview. And so I was asking Kenley what he thought this one should be about. And he said maybe more overarching themes rather than specific stories. And then the stories will come from the themes. And so my first one was your journey and growing up in Kiwani, because it's been such a big part of your life. And sort of what was that like?
Most what?
So did I actually... Okay, I'm going to restart. I have a different question. You were in the back of a car when you were 4 months old. Did you then move to Maine, or did you always live in Ohio? And then summers were in Maine. I'm going too quick.
Did you always live? She's one who. Did you always come to Maine in the summers, and you were living in Ohio?
Yes.
Was that as you were growing up? Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yes, I'm trying to remember when my parents moved to North Dakota. That was 46. And I went away to school then.
Mm-hmm.
So I never lived in North Dakota. I never lived in Michigan, where they moved next. So I think of Ohio more as home, or a former home, than either of the other places. Is that responsive?
Yeah. Then eventually he moved to Middleton, Connecticut, and that's where he spent most of his teaching career.
I see. About saying this.
Yeah.
And then continue to come up to Maine in the summers because they had a house here.
What impact has Kiwani had on you, both as a camper and in your adult life? Sort of generally speaking.
Well, one effect was having fun. And that was not only sailing and swimming and baseball and other stuff, but also a sense of responsibility when I was running for sailing department. I had to get those boats out, make sure they didn't sink. And that was, I had that feeling only ex post, not when I was there doing it. Oh, we got to go out and mark the buoys today. So we just went out and marked the buoys.
I've heard about your pranks.
About my what?
A lot about your pranks.
What prank? Which one?
Which one? That tells me all I need to know.
Oh, it's just a prank on Romy Blau and Meryl Sprowl.
Which one is that?
The backpack?
The 10 pounds?
Yeah.
Oh, see, this
I
one
wanna
has got
out
there.
I
want to
hear
there.
About this.
Henry Blau, Bill Romy, and Meryl Sprowl decided they wanted to go on the Appalachian Trail. So they set up a 6-day hike. This is the one you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So they packed their backpacks the night before, weighed them, left them in the counselor's room, and Dick Stillinger and I knew what was happening. So we got 2 10-pound rocks. One in Blau's pack, one in the Romy's pack. And we didn't know Meryl Sprowl that well, so we let him off. So when the three of them got to stop the first night. Blau dug the 10-pound rock out of his pack, and Romy thought that was a riot. He laughed until he found his 10-pound rock. And according to Blau, Bill Romy set the world's record for the 10-pound rock throw.
Oh my gosh.
That was the story?
Mm-hmm.
And where did you learn about that story?
You know, I don't even know.
I mean, it's a story that's out there. You know, it's in the public domain.
Yeah, that's true.
I hadn't heard it told by him, though, before. That's pretty funny.
The what story?
Your story. I've not heard you tell it, but I've heard the story before. Because they talk about it in the tripping department.
You just said what I heard as Zippo, as Hippo.
Hippo?
So, what's the difference between a hippo and a Zippo?
A hippo and a Zippo. I don't know.
A hippo is really heavy. A Zippo is a little lighter.
That's a good one.
See, what you do is you trigger the memory.
Yeah. 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 Exactly.
Yeah. That's funny. Do you have any other? Sorry.
That's okay. I don't know if you finished that story. The 10-pound, wasn't there?
That's done.
Okay.
Well, was there any retribution though? When they got back into camp, did they try and get back at you at all for you and Stillinger?
I don't remember any of that.
Okay. A lot of times, you know, the saying, we don't get mad, we get even. So, I think you'd probably be washing your back for a while.
Yeah. Were you on the trip?
No.
Okay. So they didn't discover the rocks until they were out on the Appalachian.
That's right. They had carried those 10-pound rocks for 12 or 15 miles.
Just giving them a workout.
Yeah, there we go. Strong counselors.
And they didn't realize it at the time.
Didn't
it
realize
Dick
it
Miller.
Until the first stop for night. And of course, they knew exactly who had done it.
Exactly. Yeah. You know when one of your friends does something like that.
Yeah.
That's classic.
So what were you going to...
Did you have any other memorable pranks? They call it the
pranks.
Duke.
The Duke.
Duke.
The Duke.
The Duke.
Pranks.
Dukes.
Nothing comes to mind yet.
Okay.
How did G.R. Frank feel about Dukes back then? Like, I mean, he knew these pranks were going on. Was he, like, somewhat supportive, or did he...
I don't know that he knew.
He might not even have known. That's true.
Yeah.
Huh.
Now, we had Cam Scarlett doing the log.
Right.
Is that something you know about? Mm-hmm. Is anybody doing it now?
Robbie does it.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm sure that story got into the log. There is no file of logs out of the 20s or whenever.
Right.
Yeah, not that I know of. I've seen.
Other stories.
How about your lodges? Want to talk about the lodges? Have any memorable moments or what lodges were you in?
Well, I was, after I left the Falcon, Panther, Polecot, and Pine Tree, and then camp got very young, and I ended up in the Lynx, and then the Wildcat for 2 years, the Crow's Nest, Junior Counselor, and the Deer for 2 years, and then Senior Counselor and the Birch, the old Birch, the one that burned.
And how many years at camp then were you?
I think it's 14.
14, okay. Including camper and running sailing.
Yeah. Yeah. In retrospect, I'm kind of surprised the Frank brothers let an 18-year-old run the sailing department.
Well, they must have had a lot of confidence in you. Seeing
well,
that
there's
they
also the possibility they didn't have anybody else.
There's that too. Do you remember what your salary was? What you were paid for running sailing? And if you don't, that's okay.
My 4 years as senior counselor per year, plus room and board, of course. $125, $200, $225, $250. You can write that one down.
Well. And camp was 8 weeks back then.
So yeah, it's a lot different.
8 weeks, $250.
Well, yeah, you didn't have much in the way of expenses.
Right.
True. Yeah.
Did you have a favorite, like, age at camp? Did you really like juniors? Or did you enjoy being, you know, head of sailing and that responsibility aspect?
I don't remember, but I've never thought in those terms. Perhaps I should say, but I had a favorite season of the year.
Which was?
Which one, yeah.
Summer.
Okay.
Solid. You were gray and maroon captain. That's very exciting. The only tie.
Infamous. Yeah.
Yeah.
Something I've always wondered, Dick, about that year, because I was a gray captain in 1975, and we were winning all year, and then we were winning by 5,000 points, then we ended up losing by less than 200 at the end of the season. And I was devastated because we were all so certain we were going to win, but the other team had come back for a variety of reasons. So that summer that you tied, were you like winning the whole year or losing the whole year? And who was more surprised when it was tied? Like, you know,
I don't know who was more surprised. We were all surprised. And you might ask, who gave the first cheer?
Right.
After we did it simultaneously.
Wow, that's cool.
I think the probability of that happening is almost zero.
Exactly.
I think maybe the scorekeeper. So, well, they're within 10 points of each other. It's like a Donald Trump movement.
You mean it was rigged? Is that what you're saying? You think
by,
it was
by the scorekeeper? Yeah.
Yeah.
Was there going to be like a tiebreaker? Did they announce it and then they said
there was no tiebreaker?
No, they accepted it.
So
it's the last thing at the award ceremony. So then they go through all the awards, all the kids that are the high point winners. And then the last thing they announce is the final score. So at that point, it's way too late to change it. So the scorekeeper knew it was a tie, but, you know, whether it was ever verified, who knows? It was all done by
him. Wasn't the last thing. The last thing was being thrown in the lake.
Well, right. The winning captain got thrown in the lake. And so this case, you both got thrown in the lake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who was the other captain?
Chuck Barkwell.
Okay. And you were gray or maroon?
Maroon.
Maroon. Okay.
It's still amazing.
It is. It's extraordinary to have a tie. The chance of that happening is, especially now with all the points, the thousands and thousands of points.
Right. Yeah. Tens and tens of thousands. Yeah.
Whatever happened to all the banners that were around the inside of the rec hall?
Well, there's some of them are up in the dining hall now. Some of the, right, Aaron?
Yeah.
Some of those original gray maroons from the early 20s are in the dining hall now, just so that they're safe. And they just don't have as much up in the rec hall since they redid it. But they're around. And there's, I think there's one in the museum, too.
Yeah. Aaron's looking at her now.
No,
do you have any?
Well, the only other one I had was Wildcat Lodge, 1945.
Mm.
That's the famous year. It wasn't the year you were captain, but you were all in Wildcat Lodge, and you 8 guys were became like lifelong friends after that summer. What was it about that summer you think that bonded everybody together?
I
mean,
I don't think it was anything about that summer. I think it was just being together. Romy Sillinger, Blau, and Miller. Back to the score. In the first week, of course, we chose up sides.
Mm-hmm.
And the choice came to me, and there was somebody, one of the boys, that I did not want on my team, so I didn't pick him.
Mm-hmm.
Although I had first chance, he ended up being the high point winner.
Wow.
And I would have won by at least several hundred points had I picked him.
Wow. But you knew him and you knew you didn't really want him on your team.
Bart?
You knew him and you didn't really want him on your team.
I know him, but I didn't want him.
Right. We won't ask for names. This is on the record. So.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Even though we
I had underestimated his score
yeah.
collecting ability.
Yeah, well, it's hard to predict.
Don't quote me on that one.
I won't.
But that 1945 Wildcat Lodge, the reason I bring it up is that was the last year of World War II. So it was kind of an emotional year because some counselors were in the war fighting, and then you guys became best friends that summer. It was just kind of ironic that, you know, it was a momentous year in many ways.
Well, the other three came back. They had a total of 5 years, and I was the one who stayed beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
We all went through the ranks. JC, well, Crow's Nest, JC, SC.
Right.
Isn't there an infamous song from that year having to do with Wildcat, Roar? Is that?
Not that I know of. Are you going to remind me of something here?
Yeah, isn't there something you told me it was a song, Roar, Wildcat, Roar?
Oh.
Is that?
Well, that's the camp song, but I don't know what year that was written.
The camp song was based on the Columbia University flight song.
Oh, right.
And Roar Lion Roar was Columbia.
Mm.
So it got changed to Roar Wildcat Roar.
Okay.
And Wake the Echoes on the Webb Lake Valley, et cetera. You didn't know that, did you?
Do you know the rest of the song? I think I put it in the
Roar Wildcat Roar and Wake the Echoes on the Webb Lake Valley. Down through the everlasting hills, while the sons of Chief Kewaunee rally round Kewaunee. Kewaunee. Shouting thy name forever, Roar Lion Roar for Camp Roar Wildcat Roar for Camp Kewaunee on the Webb Lake Shore.
Yes.
Put it to music now, man.
But you would sing that. So.
Oh, yeah. Is that sung anymore?
No, I don't think so.
No.
Oh, my. But I was told that the cheer is still used. Kwan Acebele, Kawani Ka,
and then the Kani Dogo Na.
I don't remember.
That's from the, I guess that was the name of the Boy Scout.
Woodka, the Camp Craft.
Yeah.
Kani Dugona.
Yeah.
And I have no idea what that was intended to mean.
Mike told me it means among the pines.
Yeah.
Oh. Which is right.
Hence the book, which you wrote the foreword for.
Yeah. Didn't know that.
When he approached you about assisting in the book, how did you feel? What? When he approached you about helping out with the book, how did you feel? Did you feel
helping out with the books?
The foreword
to the history book. Remember that you wrote the foreword in Mike's book, Mike's history book.
Oh,
you wrote the foreword.
Yeah, I haven't looked at that in a long time.
Did you read
it? And
what
was the question?
How did you feel? Did you feel, you know, honored, like you were the right person?
Yeah, I felt honored. Felt old.
You should reread it. It's an excellent foreword. It's really very well written.
Yeah. You have questions that come from the foreword?
No, just not particularly. I just received my own copy.
Oh, good.
The other day, so
Mike,
very
Mike
exciting.
Gave you one?
Yes.
Yeah, they're hard to come by, so.
I know.
Well, Dick's got one.
How about?
No.
What?
Yes, you do.
He was expecting a joke.
Do you have one? Another one? Sounds like you want to tell another one.
You know where I get these jokes?
You come up, you create them, you make them up. I don't know. What's the answer?
A couple years ago, I was collecting the reputation of being a joke teller.
Mm.
So I have been given 12 or 14 joke books.
Oh.
So most of the jokes I tell are not original. Little plagiarism there.
That's all right.
Except for that one about Trump.
We like that. We
the
like
hump,
that one.
The Trump pump.
Yeah. Figure somehow we got to get your permission to publish that somehow. You know, I mean, in the right place. It doesn't,
yes,
you know, in the log. Well, not necessarily the log for kids, but the log for adults.
Mm-hmm. I thought you were going to say get it published in the New York Times.
No,
that's
no,
more accurate.
Yeah, it's yeah. With, I mean, with among friends,
yeah.
Kind of thing.
I have a question because there were right now. There's a lot of women on staff because they contribute in a, you know, a different way than say male counselors and
yeah.
staff. What was it like around camp for women back then? I mean, were there many women, and what was it like having women around?
Have women, you're right. There was Emma in the kitchen.
Okay.
Ma Frank.
Uh-huh.
Betty Frank was being wheeled around in a small
wheelbarrow.
And Franny Frank.
Okay.
George's wife was at the inn, running the inn.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a woman in nature, I think. That's about all I can remember.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Did
you have dances with other with girls' camps? Because they're used. So that came later, I think, when they.
Yeah.
Okay.
When Kwani discovered sex.
When was that?
After my time.
Okay.
Uh,
Gotcha.
What stories do I have that I can't remember?
Stories, maybe. Wasn't there a story about a boat that got sunk in the lake? Isn't there a boat that somebody, was it one of the Frank brothers owned a boat? And the boat, it wasn't working, and then they sunk it or something?
Sometime shortly after the World War, the camp bought a Chris-Craft. Do you know what a Chris-Craft is?
I don't.
It's a very fancy boat. There is one sitting right out here next door.
Very nice.
Very fast, stylish. Take the boys for a ride. Mm. And George Frank loved it. So when they went out, this was after the war, this is before the war, 1939 or 40, I think. George ran it over Dee Dee and started to sink. And it was saved only because the Pete, another boat, was underway out there, and it towed the Chris-Craft in. So when I was responsible for marking the reefs, George each year would say to me, "Be sure you mark Dee Dee correctly. It got marked wrong." He would remind me that he had run over it. It had not been marked wrong. He just didn't know where the flags were. Now, in terms of sunk boats, there is at least one, or was some years ago, a rowboat that was sunk out by Dee Dee. I don't know who did it or why.
Okay.
And I suspect if you go out in calm weather, you could find it.
Oh, interesting.
Unless it's all rotted away. But the Pete was a towboat for logs, taking the forestry product downstream to the dam, which the camp had acquired. And then there was another boat, and I don't know how they got that one over. That was a mistake. The Kewan.
Oh.
And the Kewan was a one-lunger, and the guys who knew how to fix motors always had a hard time getting it started. And I don't remember going out on that one. But going out in the Pete was a real treat. And the Pete, I was told, didn't appear one year. And somebody said, "Oh, got hauled out on the ice and sunk."
Ah, that's the...
Is that it?
I think that's the one, yeah.
And I'm trying to think of the in-town person who took care of the camp. Peelig White.
Huh.
And I think he did that under the instructions of Frank. The Pete used to be put on a... Whatever you call thing you put a boat on when it comes out of the water.
Trailer.
It wasn't a trailer.
Yeah, the wooden platform.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a name for it.
And there were four wheels on that thing, and it was wheeled up on rails underneath the shop. You didn't know that, did you?
I did not.
I don't know whether the rails still exist.
They're called skids, I think. Those things are called skids. You put the boat, you pull the boat up on shore on the skids, and sometimes they have wheels, sometimes they don't. then you haul them usually with the truck and then put them under the shop.
Okay.
What they used to do. Yeah.
The peat, that's the one that he hauled out in the winter on the ice. Yeah. Did you ever do Bass Rock in the winter? The Bass Rock walk? No. So did you come here in the winter ever? No. Summer?
Once.
Okay.
Maybe 15 or 20 years ago.
Okay.
We stayed for a weekend, courtesy of the people from whom we were renting on VN Beach.
Okay.
And that's my one experience on snowmobiling. I think Weld would be a very nice place to live if it weren't for the weather.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to be pretty hardy to live here in the winter.
Yeah.
You know, it's cold and gray, and the view's not quite like this in the winter. Oh, it's pretty, but...
And it never gets above 20 degrees.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, it got up to 20 today.
What a joy. Can't wait till tonight.
Do you have other questions?
I did. I wanted to ask about the George and Raymond Frank Foundation. The George and Raymond Frank Foundation and your thoughts on that transition. Because when it was happening in 99, it wasn't, you know, fully complete. Well,
who owns Camp Kewaunee?
I don't really know. It's a non-profit.
Right.
It's a non-profit.
No one owns it.
I don't know. There is a legal organization that owns it, which is probably the Frank Brothers. But beyond that, who owns Frank Brothers?
It's a foundation. George Raymond Frank Foundation.
And nobody owns foundations?
No, because it's a non-profit, so no one benefits from it, except the organization benefits, in this case, an educational organization, which is the camp.
Okay.
So the camp is owned by the foundation, and it's a non-profit. Therefore, anything that it makes goes back into the organization, just like the Red Cross or a lot of universities. But
do you know why Sunday Beach is called Sunday Beach?
No, I don't.
And you know what the fort is.
I do know what the fort is.
Before the fort was built, all of campers were taken down to Sunday Beach for a bath. So that was why it was called Sunday Beach.
Here we go.
On Sunday.
Bathing facility.
Good story.
I've seen the pictures, but I didn't really connect the name.
No.
That's funny.
And when did the chief stop coming?
That would have been
2019, I believe.
Yeah, it was right during COVID. So it might have been 2020, which we didn't have a summer 2020. And then in 21, I think that might have been the first year he didn't come. So his last appearance was in 2019.
So it was not given up because it was racist or sexist?
No, it definitely was. It didn't die by COVID. The ceremony was changed because it was thought that it was more appropriate with the times to not use a Native American in caricature. So, in other words, if it had been a real Native American talking, it might have been acceptable, but since it was someone pretending to be, it was thought to be, what's the term, culturally appropriating somebody that's not. Yeah. And so it took 2 years to kind of come to fruition, but eventually the board made the decision to do that. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was on the board for a year, and then the next summer I got not reelected because I was out of the country.
The Frank Foundation board.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But
speaking of Indians, if that's an appropriate name, on the road, go about a mile south on Dixfield Road, mile south from the entrance to the camp,
mm-hmm.
there is on the west side, kind of a rise in the contour.
Yeah.
Maybe a 10-foot rise. On top of one of them, there is a Indian burial, single Indian. And the last time I looked at it, which was now 10 or 15 years ago, there was something marking it, like a glass pitcher or something.
I think I know where you're talking about. Wasn't there a sign there? Wasn't there
I have never seen a sign there. It may be.
How do you know that it was a Native American burial site?
It was a burial that had been done right where the road was going through. So they had to move the body from where they wanted the road to go to the hill out of the way.
Yeah, I'll have to look for that. Because
that's interesting.
Yeah.
I
biked by there a bunch of times, and I remember seeing, I thought it was a picture of an Indian, but I don't ever remember hearing anything about a burial. Yeah.
So do you know where he's
from? Just right outside of Carthage.
Okay.
Right, right on that rise as you're going into Carthage.
I don't know which rise.
Yeah.
Okay. I would say it's before Carthage, but
okay.
I don't know.
I think you're right. I will look at it. I never knew that.
No, I found it once, but it was many years ago, and I
mm-hmm.
don't have a memory that would permit me to identify for sure.
Right. Okay.
Without search.
Well, anybody got anything else? I don't want to keep everybody here too long, but
you seem like you have.
I actually have something.
Okay.
There's can you speak about or talk about this? Wasn't there a secret club?
Oh, I forgot all about that.
Okay. You remember now?
Yes.
Okay.
Are you allowed to talk about it?
This is
on public record.
We don't talk about Fight Club.
Secret society.
This is worth preserving.
Okay,
good.
Calicus. Calic. K-A-L. K stands for Kwani. A stands for attitude. L stands for leadership. I stands for initiative.
Okay.
Calic. Character. C-U, unselfishness, S, service. Calicus.
Okay.
Great memory for all the acronym.
Well, there was a vote, I think, by senior counselors voting senior type campers into Calicus. And this is supposed to be an honor. The object was to induce the people who were elected to come back the next year. It's supposed to be an incentive.
Hmm.
And yes, I got invited to join. But a few years later, it had dropped out of use. I think they identified it correctly as a biased organization. Calicus.
Calicus.
You ever heard of it?
No.
So what?
Where did you hear of it?
It's in the book. It's mentioned in the book. In the history book.
Mike.
I think you must have mentioned it to Mike. And it's in there. But he's he's very sketchy about it. He doesn't give a lot of details. There was supposedly a secret society, and it was very hard to get in. And
it was secret.
Yeah, and the senior counselors knew about it, but some kids might have known, and it's because they were trying to get him back the next year, like you're saying. So
one of the problems was that one of the campers was not judged to be eligible for Calicus, but his father was on the staff, So the message was to the father, your son is not good enough to join.
Wow.
And how, do you remember how he felt, the kid? Was it?
I don't know. He was a year or two older than I.
Okay.
Jack Smith.
Okay.
And his father was Coach Smith in athletics.
So what did the secret society do? Did they have meetings in the woods? Or
the only meeting I can remember was at Howell Wendell's camp. Now you don't know where else. It's at the eastern end of the Weld Beach, but not on the beach. And who owns it? I should know that.
Eastern end of the...
Of Dummer's Beach?
Weld,
eastern end?
Weld Beach.
Yeah, what's the name?
The State Park? I don't know which beach you're talking... Kewaunee Inn Beach?
No. The town beach up there.
Dummer's.
Dummer's, okay, that's what I said.
Yeah.
Dummer's.
So yep. Who owns it now? I don't know. Howell Wendell was the range guy and was terribly overweight. And he would live at his camp and transport himself by his motorboat down here.
Mm-hmm.
And one day he did something and fell off his motorboat out in the middle of the lake. And I don't know how he got saved, but he was saved by somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Don't put that in. But Howell Wendell, because of the danger of firearms, would always hand out 5 bullets to each shooter, and the shooters would be lying down, and Howell Wendell would make sure everything's ready. He says, load and commence firing.
Still taught that today?
Yeah.
And then once there was a squirrel that ended up on the top of what was holding up the targets.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the campers fired at the turtle, at the squirrel, instead of at the target.
Did they get it?
Yes.
Everybody got in a little
that was
trouble.
A no-no.
Yeah.
And all you got to do is look at the targets and see which target doesn't have 5 bullets in it.
Mm.
And that kid gets caught pretty easily.
Yeah. On the way up here, I remembered that I once again had forgotten to bring up something, a minor contribution to the historical society. 2 range medals. Pro marksman and a marksman, as I remember.
I've never shot. I need to try. That's what I've been told.
You should go out, for sure. Absolutely, you should. We'll bring them up next year, and
there you go.
Donate them to Aaron. So put them under your
picture.
Yes,
I have faith, too.
Why is that? Just bring them next year.
What was one of your favorite activities outside of sailing that you kind of gravitated toward?
Probably softball. Every Saturday night after dinner and before the campfire, there'd be a junior council or senior council softball game. You know, are they still going on?
I don't think so.
Not every week.
They
have a couple during the year.
Yeah,
not
they'll
every
do.
Week. Yeah.
Basketball, too, is now very famous.
I don't remember who won most, but I do remember one event. I noticed the placement of the, I was a junior counselor, I noticed the placement of the senior counselor outfield, and I thought, that guy's playing in too far. So I was able to hit one over his head for, you guessed it, a home run. And Stillinger was really pissed. A home run in a JCSC game?
I have heard about a specific game where you regret messing up a pitch or a throw or something.
That what?
There was like a mess up that you still regret. Is that you?
Mistake, an error, an error in softball?
Still haunts you.
There were softball leagues among the campers. And I had one team. And the usual practice was for the captain of the team to be the pitcher. He was the only one who could get the ball across the plate. So I was pitching. And we were leading by one run late in the game. And the ball came. I got it through to first base, right over the first baseman's head.
Mm.
Two runs scored. We lost by one run. That's your story. Where in heaven's name did you learn that?
Sorry. You see, every time I remember that. It, so it must be important.
Yeah. That was 48.
It's okay.
Wow.
48. Yeah.
It used to be 10 or 15 years earlier than that, that the entire camp was divided into the softball leagues, softball teams. And each team would have on it a senior counselor and would go down to the junior C's. So you had all kinds of people. That was a mess. You know what the junior C's used to be called?
No. What?
Midgets.
Right. Okay, yes, I did actually read that.
Yeah. Talk about...
I was,
yeah, we don't do that anymore.
About, incorrect grammar.
I was present when that decision was made to change. The midgets were objecting. And so the issue came up at some senior meeting to rename the midgets.
Good call.
Yeah. Bit more politically correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. The beginning of an era.
Times have definitely changed.
Well, one of the things that surprised me at the talk several nights ago was the size and shapes of the campers. They all seem so small and young. Is this a young camp?
They come in and I think that they're younger than they are. But some of them are the opposite and they are like 6 feet tall and I'm just like, whoa.
Yeah.
It's really, truly.
I don't know the average
age,
but there are a lot of, 8-9 year olds that you probably saw, which is great.
Yeah. Is there basketball still?
Mm-hmm.
Very popular.
Yeah.
It's probably the most popular activity, right? Wouldn't you say?
I would say that or soccer.
Or fishing.
Well,
basketball was just taking off when I
It was always baseball. Now it's soccer and basketball overcome it. Yeah.
There were, on the athletic field, 3 softball fields at one point.
Dang.
Did you know that?
I did not.
3 softball fields. One where the current field is, and one off to the left in the far distance of the left fields, and one to the right at the curve of the road. And a yes, when the games were simultaneously being played, they did interfere with each other. And then, fortunately, the camp discovered soccer.
It's a big one.
Yeah.
Especially during the World Cup.
Yes.
They all go crazy.
I have an overall question. Unless, did you have others?
No, keep going.
So, that's okay. You're coming on 95 years old.
Hmm.
When's your birthday?
February 25th.
So,
1931.
AD. Yeah. So, in your 94 years, is there one historical event in world history that really impacted you or that is memorable, that kind of was transformational or that really made a difference that
you history?
World history or U.S. history? Just an event, a historical event that you really...
If you're talking about my camp years, the answer is no.
Okay.
If you're talking about succeeding years, then you got problems for me of identifying the years we are living through now.
Yeah.
The danger here.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a hard question.
Yeah. It is a tough time. It's hard to see, I'm sure. See what's happening. What about World War II? Like, you were 41.
Camper.
Yeah?
Well, I was 10 at Pearl Harbor.
Okay.
30,
I got it. Yep.
I think I have this memory right. Pearl Harbor was on a Sunday. No. I can't remember the day of the week. But I was reading the newspaper underneath the dining room table at age 10.
Mm.
And John Corey knocked on the door, my age, delivering something. And his message was, the Japanese have attacked Pearl Harbor. Then, a few years later, 6 o'clock in the morning, my father was up, huddled over the radio, listening to the report of a landing in France.
Mm-hmm.
Those are two recollections.
Yeah. Very memorable. So I'm picturing you're reading the newspaper at age 10.
Yeah, the funnies.
Okay. Oh, got the comics. Okay.
Wasn't the stock market.
What do you call them now? Comics?
Comics,
funnies. Funnies. Like, we called it the funnies when I was growing up. Yeah.
No one reads the newspaper anymore. So.
And then, you got interested in economics starting when? What led you into that field of economics? What inspired you?
When I was in college, I was a math major.
Okay.
And I did not want to major in economics, which I liked, because there was a required course meeting Wednesday night, and you had to give a seminar production. And I didn't want to do that. So I think it was my math major that got me into graduate school. Getting out of the Navy, I let it do graduate school in economics. And one thing led to another, and here I am.
And so you got your master's in economics?
PhD.
PhD in economics.
Yes.
From what school?
Yale.
Should have known that.
Good school, yes.
Good school, yeah. And then you taught at
for Westland for 46 years.
You still, go ahead. I guess you still get your email address from there.
I'm sorry?
When I used to send you emails to your Wesleyan address. Do you still get those emails?
Even oh, yeah.
You still get them?
I'm still on the email list for
okay.
For Wesleyan.
Because you were emeritus for a while. You
went I still emeritus. Am.
You still are an emeritus professor? Okay.
Emeritus goes until you die.
Okay. In colleges, yeah. Okay, I guess you're right. Because, yeah, I have that address, and every now and then, I think I email Gene now, but every now and then I think, wow, I should just send Dick an email. He might, and then I thought they got rid of that address, so it still happened.
The students who graduated from Wesleyan last June had not even entered nursery school at the time I retired.
Wow. That's hard to imagine, but you're right. I guess it would be 22 years. 20 years? Yeah.
Hey, sailing weather.
Are you there cold? You go, boy.
Yeah. You chilly?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we can.
Me too. We
can get you guys. We covered a lot of ground.
Yeah.
All right, let me get one picture.
Well, I'm
you
sure
guys.
There are a lot of things that you will remember.
Oh, we'll remember them. Guys, go Aaron and Dan. I go next to him. There's not too much light here. I think I can get it. But I want to get the mountains. That's great. That's perfect. Okay. Then you put your hat up a little bit, or just get me.
I guess I can take it off.
Yeah,
my hair.
Yeah,
now, I don't know. Do I have hair now?
No, it's fine. It's fine. Because that way, I can see your face.
Okay.
Now. Okay. One, two, three. Great.
You want to get in there?
Great shot.
What's your role at Kiwani?
I'm in the museum.
She's the...
I had been told that before.
Here,
are you running the museum?
Yes, she is.
With the assistance of Tom Pierce.
Oh. Now,
okay,
you're
more.
The one I was planning to bring those medals to.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any?
There's a bunch of awards in there. I don't think I have any medals, though.
Okay. Next year we're going to bring them.
So,
these are pre-World War II medals.
Wow.
When World War II started, and they needed the metal for guns and ammunition and stuff. So they went to cloth things in some place. I guess I lost them. I had a sharpshooter designation kind of sew on your t-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where that is.
Okay, one last picture.
I'm going to get one more picture here.
One last picture.
That's great.
Great, thanks.
Do you think working at camp made you want to teach? Being around kids like that?
I don't know. I don't think I ever made the connection.
No.
I discovered, somewhat into my career, that I enjoyed the flexibility that I had.
Mm.
Flexibility which was not available to almost all the rest of the world. And this flexibility, topics I taught, the flexibility of where I taught.
Yeah.
Flexibility in how I presented the material.
You must have taught thousands of students in your 46 years.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. And you have, you're probably asking the question, have you ever taught any famous people?
Oh, I've asked you that question.
Mm-hmm. Did you know the answer to that?
I think Aaron knows the answer now because it came up at the.
I think
the
I know the one.
What?
Bill Belichick.
Right!
Yes!
How did you know that?
Mike's presentation.
the history presentation.
Yeah.
Football coach Bill Belichick. Yeah.
Also, Massachusetts, born and raised. So. Ah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But he's dating a girl from Maine, right now.
Who?
Bill Belichick is dating a young girl from Maine. That's
really?
You know the story. Oh yeah, she's in her late 20s.
Jean has just returned.
Oh, hello.
Hey.
Well,
I'm missing the party.
Oh, you're missing a great time. Yeah,
I have another story for you.
There's nothing
to do with Kalani.
Okay, that's okay.
Judy was here when we got here.
I don't remember very many of what I was
here for 2 hours. And the boat's in the garage.
But I do remember.
Thank you. I was talking to Paul. I said, you know, I've been here nonstop for weeks.
When she was a
senior,
second semester.
And they chose
halfway through the term.
1 2-hour period.
Well, the good news is
she came to my office and said she wanted
some
advice.
But I was in contact. There were 3 delivery guys, plus Dave.
She asked me, should I go to business school for an MBA, or should I try out for the Olympic crew? What do you think I said?
Olympic crew.
My exact words. That's a no-brainer. Of course you should try out for the Olympic crew. If you don't, you will wonder until the day you died whether you could have made it. She tried out for the crew. She stroked the 8 to gold in Los Angeles.
Wow.
So I take partial credit.
who was that Dick you were talking about? Who was it you were talking about that made the Olympic crew?
This is a former student of mine.
Okay.
Yeah. Kathy Keeler.
Huh. She rode in Los Angeles in 84?
Yeah.
Wow.
So she must have been the class of 82.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's very impressive.
Yeah, she got a twofer on that one. She got the gold and she married the Harvard crew coach.
This one is a pole vaulter in college.
Oh!
That's one of the hardest at the track and field or anything.
We used to have pole vaulting here.
At Kwani?
We did.
Yes.
Really?
Into sawdust. The pit was made of sawdust.
Oh my gosh.
Can you imagine that?
Well,
is that true? The high jump pit was sawdust. The pole vault pit might add some kind of old mattresses or something.
I don't remember what the top
was. It was pretty archaic.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty sketchy.
No, it was in about the area where the goal is for the soccer team.
Yeah, right. It was right off
there someplace.
Yeah. I'll teach it. Bring it back.
There you go.
Yeah, that was one of the counselors in the 30s, the pole vaulter. So we had a more active track and field athletic type program than we have now.
Well, there was a gray maroon event every summer where they had literally all the track events. We had sprints. We had long jump, high jump, shot put, everything. And the longest run was like the quarter mile, which went out to the main road, back in the kitchen road, and then back to the athletic field. And it was a huge event. I mean, everyone was participating. And then it was also an activity, and then it kind of petered out in the 70s or 80s, I think. But yeah, I remember that well.
How'd you ever get into pole vaulting?
You know, I was a distance runner, and then they asked me if I wanted to try a field event, and I don't know, that one just seemed the most fun. I give my mom a heart attack every time, but...
Yes, I understand that.
She wasn't too fond of my choice, but it worked out.
And you did it all through high school and college?
I did it like twice in 8th grade when I was like 13, stopped doing it, got back into it my junior year, and then decided I'm going to go to college for it. So
that's cool.
That's what I did.
What did you run when you were a distance runner?
I did cross country. I was a big cross country person. Do you mean like times or distances? Please don't say times.
Distance,
okay, I was going to say, we don't need to talk about that. 5K, I did a 10K once, and then for track, I did 2 mile, 1 mile, 800. And then I slowly transitioned down. So my senior year of high school, I was running a 400 and 200. So I sort of just did everything. You know, just slowly worked my way.
Yeah, great sport, though.
Great sport. Yeah. Best sport. Life.
Yeah, well, I agree.
In my opinion.
It's a great sport. Well, this has been fun. We covered a lot of ground.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for your time.
When I was junior counselor, the deer, 2 years in a row, the senior counselor, both years, was Joe Seldman. And he was a junior and senior at Yale. And he was a good swimmer. He was here for the swimming program.
Mm-hmm.
But come senior year, he was picked to become head of the Whiffen Poofs. You know the singing group.
Yeah.
And he had the choice of becoming captain of the swimming team or head of the Whiffs. He became head of the Whiffs. Gave up swimming.
Wow.
Did I mention Joe Selby to you before?
No. That's the first time I've heard that name.
Yeah. I think I got killed 2 years later in a train accident.
Boy, that's a gapper.
I think my last one would probably be, you are the oldest living alum.
Huh?
Do you have any advice for whether it be campers or staff members currently? No.
No advice. I think it's very pleasing and somewhat surprising that Kwani is continuing. Other camps are giving up. And the changes are in the composition of the campers. There are more short-termers than there were. We had maybe two or three or five per year. But now it's, what, everybody? Most people?
It's a lot of them, yeah.
That kind of does a number on gray maroon composition.
Have to adjust the activities to fit the needs of the families.
You know Betty Frank.
Mm-hmm.
At one point she wanted to turn Kiwani into a co-ed camp. Fortunately, everybody said no. That'd been terrible to try to manage.
It'd be hard.
Yeah.
Second World War, the field between the infirmary and the dining hall was turned into a garden producing beans. So I remember picking beans, and then the field way up there that what's her name?
On Center Hill?
No, not Center Hill. Anyway, big field up there. Linda Bean.
Oh, at the head of the lake, yeah, where Linda Bean's property was.
During the war, that field was turned into a bean factory. So the campers pile into the war canoes, go up and pick beans. That was our war effort. Do you know that?
I knew about some war efforts. I didn't know it was specifically beans.
Yeah.
So what do? They eat the beans or do they ship them off to the soldiers? What was the meaning of getting all those beans?
They were turned over to the owner of the field.
Okay.
I don't know what he or she did with them.
Okay.
Oh, I can remember coming back on after a trip. Bates had picked this up in the bouncing buggy. And we came down the Phillips Road into town. And at the turn, we ran out of gas. Pushed the bouncing buggy the 2 miles into camp.
Oh my gosh.
I think I'm glad it didn't run out of gas on the Byron Road.
Yeah. Or in Phillips. Well, we should let you go. We've been talking here for a while.
Okay.